You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, October 19th, 2020.
Some of the numbers from the state are the worst they've ever been in terms of caseload that we've seen. Even deaths have increased again. And so it makes us feel like what we're doing is probably the right thing here locally.
Later in the program, WFHB Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman talks to Mayor John Hamilton for our regular Monday segment, A Few Minutes with the Mayor.
Also coming up in the next half hour, you'll hear from WFHB correspondent Jake Jacobson about the importance of community radio during our fall fun drive at WFHB. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Monday, October 19th. I'm Aaron Comforti. Indiana reported almost 1,600 newly confirmed cases of COVID-19 today, and the state's moving average is at an all-time high of about 1,800 new cases per day. That's all according to the Indiana State Department of Health. It added 23 COVID-related deaths to the state's tally as well. The health department issued an advisory today citing what it called data issues for preventing the agency from updating its COVID hospital admissions numbers. Without the updated numbers, there are almost 1,400 Hoosiers hospitalized because of COVID-19. Locally, Monroe County recorded over 30 newly confirmed cases yesterday. That's a bit higher than the county's moving average. Since reporting began, Bloomington High School South has reported that 12 of its students tested positive for the coronavirus. For North High School, that number was 8. Surrounding counties basically saw between 0 and 10 new cases. And today kicks off the 2020 Fall Fun Drive at WFHB. WFHB broadcasts its local news show 4 times a week, Monday through Thursday, but we need your support to keep this programming running. Donate online right now at WFHB.org and click the red donate button or call 812-323-1200. That's 812-323-1200 to donate or become a subscriber by phone. A WFHB supporter has offered to match your donation dollar for dollar, and a generous donation of $72, for example, provides 1 week of the WFHB local news. Stay safe, and thank you for supporting community radio. That's all for your local news brief from WFHB. I'm Aaron Comforti.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill said cases per 100,000 people were inching back up. She spoke during the October 16th COVID-19 press conference.
And so we stayed in yellow this week in the metrics map for the state. So again, it kind of echoes what the mayor just said, what we've been saying these past many weeks. It's not a time to let up. We know that it is been a long haul, and we're all tired and a little fatigued, but it's not time to let up, and we need to continue our current efforts to slow and stop the spread of this virus.
Caudill reminded Bloomington City residents of the 15-person gathering limit and reported the OptumServe testing site to remain open through November. Indiana University Assistant Vice President of Strategic Partnerships Kirk White reported student positivity rates.
In our residence halls, we went from a positive move from 1.5% positive tests down to 1.1. In the Greek system, it went from 1.6 down to 1.4. Greek off campus went from 3.5 down to 2.5. And one place we saw a slight uptick was our general off-campus population. It went from 0.5 up to 0.8. So overall, it's still a relatively good trend.
President of Indiana University Health South Central Region, Brian Shockney, said region hospitals experienced an inpatient increase. He said positivity rates have risen.
We are seeing in Orange County, Lawrence County, and Morgan County increases of positivity. On the state health website, Lawrence County has gone in the last 7 days from a 7.5 positivity rate to 18.4. Orange has gone from 10.5 to 25% positivity with additional deaths. So we are asking that we've been diligent in those communities, but knowing that this is a resource, it's a regional resource, and it does affect us as a region.
Shockney said Monroe County numbers also saw an increase. County Commissioner Julie Thomas also reminded residents about available financial assistance.
Any resident who is struggling to pay their bills, the Board of Commissioners and Monroe County Council work together to provide a Township Assistance Fund, because township trustees are your line of defense. Every county resident lives in a township, so please contact your township trustee if you're struggling to pay for housing or utilities, the basic necessities. They will help you.
Thomas reported $39 has been allocated to assist local residents. She said $100,000 was reserved for the program.
The nonpartisan advocacy group Hoosier Action hosted a town hall on Thursday titled The People's Lawyer, a town hall for Indiana's Attorney General. In the state's Attorney General race, Democrat Jonathan Weinzopfel faces off against Republican Todd Rokita. The Indiana Supreme Court suspended Attorney General Curtis Hill's law license in May after Hill committed misdemeanor battery against four women. Indiana Republican delegates then selected Todd Rokita for the AG race this November. Both Rokita and Weinzopfel were invited to Hoosier Action's town hall, but Rokita was unable to join the discussion. Jonathan Weinzopfel, raised in the Evansville area, talked about why he entered the race for Attorney General.
I've had the great honor of serving 5 years in the state legislature, 2 terms as mayor of the city of Evansville, and most recently was chancellor of the Ivy Tech Evansville campus for about 5.5 years. And in between all that, I've had the opportunity to serve and work in private legal practice for a number of years. I got into this race because I wanted to restore honor, integrity, and purpose to the office.
Zach, a resident from Jasper, talked to Weinzopfel about protections for the LGBTQIA plus community in Indiana. The state has yet to pass a comprehensive hate crimes law with protections for age, sex, or gender identity.
So, candidate Weinzopfel, my question for you is, what will you do to make sure that all people, regardless of race, gender, religion, or sexual identity, are safe in all corners of our state?
Well, frankly, probably the most important question to be asked and the most important issue in our times today, especially as we have seen the rhetoric from our president belittling people that somehow in his mind are viewed as different. He has divided us into good Americans and bad Americans. And I'm just incredulous that we have seen leadership in this country from our president that is pushing these divisions on our communities, on our society. So let me offer a few thoughts. First, I should say, as mayor in 2000, mayor of Evansville in 2011, we were just the third city to pass a non-discrimination ordinance in an effort to try to protect gays and lesbians from discrimination in our community. As much as anything, it was about sending a message that discrimination would not be tolerated.
Stephanie Wessler, a resident of Martinsville, spoke about how her husband died from cancer. The city of Martinsville's water was found to be contaminated with cancer-causing chemicals, and the city has been treating it with EPA oversight since 2004. But a report from last year found that residents are still at risk. According to Great Lakes Now, Morgan County has the highest cancer rate per 100,000 people in 2018.
And he wasn't just a father. He was a loved husband, a great worker, a brother, and a son. He was a church treasurer and loved by many. My home was recently tested for the presence of PCE, a toxic chemical. There is PCE in my breath, along with my three precious children. There's also PCE in my water, air, and soil. I'm hoping that by telling my story tonight that leaders will make safe water and air a priority so that maybe no other families have to go through the tragedy that my children and I have suffered the last 10 years. Because my family is still being affected by these toxic chemicals, I would like to ask you an important question. Whether it is corporate toxic sites or workplace discrimination, as Attorney General, what will your office do to hold big corporations and powerful people accountable and ensure that everyday Hoosiers are protected from powerful bad actors?
Well, Stephanie, first and foremost, so sorry for your loss. What a tragic experience that has been for you. I'm so very sorry. I see the Attorney General's job as protecting Hoosiers, and I'm not sure I care who is on the other side of the fence. If there is a violation of state law, that is an action that I can take as Attorney General. And so I'm willing to investigate any complaint, any situation where there is there's a belief that there is a concern that some actor has violated state law and has contaminated property. So that would be my promise that I can do as Attorney General.
A representative from Hoosier Action said, quote, "In the middle of a pandemic, it is more important than ever that we have an Attorney General who will fight to protect the health of Hoosiers, hold law enforcement accountable, and shield us from wealthy corporations who seek profits at the expense of our well-being," end quote. The race for state attorney general is on the ballot for the November 3rd election. We will have more election coverage next week in our Meet the Candidate series here on WFHB Local News.
Bloomington City Council cast a final vote on the 2021 city budget during their October 14th meeting. Mayor John Hamilton proposed a budget of approximately $95 million.
Every one of us, no doubt, can point to something in this budget that we might like changed or different. But I believe it very well embodies our community's values in the face of these times, and it is a prudent and effective investment for a better future for our community.
Council member Susan Scamberluri presented an amendment to raise the number of sworn Bloomington Police Department officers from 100 to 105. Hamilton said the addition would include social workers, neighborhood resource specialists, and data analysts. Council member Susan Sandberg said BPD runs on a short staff.
This absolutely has no fiscal impact with this year's budget. It does, however, allow the flexibility that I think we all need to be cognizant of, that right now, and for those of us that have taken the time to get acquainted with the BPD staff, to go on some ride-alongs, to attend some of their roll calls, it is absolutely clear that they are dealing with staffing shortages. That is a fact on the ground that we are seeing. We can observe it with our eyes when we take the time to go in and meet with them and talk to them about what their needs are.
Sandberg said the amendment would only affect the 2021 budget. Scamberluri mentioned a 0% increase of sworn officers in past years.
We have seen a 0% increase in sworn officers in this city in the last 5 years. There is not some huge increase in sworn officers on the streets. In fact, there is none. And that's while our population is growing, and that concerns me. So preserving a higher number, I think, becomes very, very important.
Scamberluri stated the Novak Consulting Group study suggested an increase in officers. Sandberg said many officers work double shifts, are tired, and overworked. Councilwoman Isabel Piedmont-Smith said officer workload should be reduced by a reallocation of duties, not additional officers.
I do not think that it's healthy for our community to continue in the vein of thinking that sworn police officers are the answer to all of our problems. I know they're overworked. Let us look at ways to reduce their workload, not by hiring more police officers, but by addressing the problems that lead people to call the police. By addressing homelessness, by addressing poverty, by addressing mental health and addiction issues.
Councilmember Jim Sims expressed support of the adjustments in between transformation of public safety. The amendment was approved. The council voted in favor of the overall budget, with Councilmember Matt Flaherty voting against the legislation.
And now it's time for this week's edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor. WFHB Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman and Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton talk about the increasing coronavirus numbers, contactless parking, and more.
Community members posted questions on our social media via Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, John Hamilton answers these questions. So the first question that I have is, how do Bloomington's local COVID-19 numbers compare to Indiana's overall statistics?
Well, our community is doing a lot better right now in terms of COVID than the rest of the state and a lot of the country. We're very pleased that we've had 5 or 6 weeks now of basically improving numbers. You know, the many tests that IU is doing gives us a much closer view of what's going on. Now, we're not out of the woods locally, but we've seen a continued, basically good trajectory. But the state is going the opposite direction, and that actually does affect us, our hospitals and some of our other numbers. But the state is really going the wrong direction. And like much of the country in the Midwest has seen a significant rise in cases. In fact, some of the numbers from the state are the worst they've ever been in terms of caseload that we've seen. Even deaths have increased again. And so it makes us feel like what we're doing is probably the right thing here locally, to have strong mask ordinance and really restrict the numbers of gathering people and those kinds of things.
And what kind of things would have to locally initiate changes of these gathering sizes or the mandate, such as, you know, the positivity rate or local cases? What would have to shift?
Well, the first point is that because the rest of the state is going the wrong direction, that really can affect us. It can affect us in at least a couple ways. One is, as people come in and out of Monroe County or Bloomington from other parts of the state, there's a greater risk that they're going to be bringing virus with them and bringing it into our community. So that travel back and forth, if the rest of the state is seeing really high numbers, for example, Orange County had very high numbers recently, that can affect us. The second way it affects us is our healthcare system. The hospital has seen a noticeable increase in beds, hospitalizations for COVID, and much of that can be from outside our region. Much of it is from outside our region right now. So our healthcare system can get stressed, our hospitals and others, even though locally we may be doing pretty well. So we'll have to keep watching our numbers, the overall case rate that we have, the overall positivity rate, hospitalization levels, testing overall background prevalence levels. All those things are we're watching. I kind of think about it as a multi-factored thermostat that we're trying to adjust the different levels of gathering sizes and masks and other things as a big complicated thermostat that's trying to protect our health. And so far, it's been pretty good, and we'll have to just keep watching all those indicators. If, for example, if we had a big eruption in a school and a lot of kids got sick, or we had a major employer, or we just had an area of town or that had a lot of virus spread suddenly, we might have to think about changing more of a stay-at-home order or even tighter restrictions on gathering sizes. But we hope that won't happen, and we're kind of in a mode now through Thanksgiving, I would say, into Thanksgiving, when many of the students will leave and IU will close for a couple months, that we're just watching it week by week.
So the next question that I have is, what made the city decide to implement 3 app-only parking locations in Bloomington when contactless app parking is already available at all the parking meters?
Yes, so in an area kind of up west of the stadium, city council created a new parking zone that needed either a bunch of meters to be installed or to have some other way to implement a controlled parking. So putting in a bunch of meters up in a residential neighborhood was expensive and wasn't clearly the right thing to do. So we're trying this app only, that is online only parking system, to see if it can work well. We'll monitor it and see what happens. We have done it in another location around the Trades District. We've tried it and it seems to have worked pretty well. It avoids the physical expense of installing a whole bunch of physical meters and maintaining all those meters as opposed to simply putting up some pretty basic signs and then using the app to help people comply with it. So it's basically cost savings and efficiency, but we'll find out if it's a burden for numbers of people. We'll learn about that. They can reach out to the mayor's office or public works parking if it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these parking areas aren't going to be kind of reworking already metered spaces. They will be new parking areas.
Yeah, the reason we're doing it was a brand new parking area that the city council created. It's not really connected to other parking areas physically so much. And we either had to install a whole bunch of new meters, make sure they're all working every day and all that, or try this new method, which is, we think, a lot more efficient.
And so can someone without a smartphone or without access to apps use these parking spots?
I don't think so, unfortunately. I think it's going to require the use of apps. If there is any question about that and there's an access problem, people should call my office or the parking department at Public Works and report that. And we can see if we can figure something out. But it's generally designed for smartphones to say, if you're going to get to a residential parking here, you need to sign up on the smartphone and do that. And it saves a lot of money and time in a lot of ways. But we do want to make sure it can work well for everybody.
All right. And that leads me to my last question today, which is coming from WFHB ourselves. And so what role do you see WFHB playing in the community of Bloomington and beyond as an independent local station?
We are so lucky to have WFHB in Bloomington as a community-run, community-owned, community-led radio station that focuses and brings so much news and entertainment that's got the Bloomington vibe and the Bloomington flavor. You know, we all can take it for granted, but having in these days when news is so important and the stories of what's going on is so important and connections are so important, having a local station like WFHB is just a treasure for our community and for all of us. So we are really fortunate to have you all at the station and as a community to be blessed with everyday news, entertainment, up-to-date information, and of course music and all that happens fills our days. It's a great treat and a great benefit.
Do you have a question for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment that question on this coming week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your question answered. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman. You just heard an interview with Mayor John Hamilton and myself where we covered important local news and also the importance of how you receive that information. And now I'm here with one of our volunteer news reporters, Jake Jacobson. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Jake, I wanted to ask you today, how has working with WFHB impacted you?
So growing up, I would always hear people talk on the radio. And one of the things I always wanted to do growing up, for whatever reason, was be on the radio. Like I wanted my voice to be on the radio. I wanted people to hear me talk like I was listening to other people talk. And so I was at work one day and somebody from the radio station who was buying records mentioned that she was buying records for her show at the station. And I was curious and I asked her about it and she said, yeah, I volunteer at WFHB. You can just go down there next Wednesday and they will, or, and you could do volunteer orientation. They'll put you right in. And I was like, no, you're lying. But she wasn't. And so working with the news and public affairs, working with the news and public affairs department specifically, has really helped me kind of learn what happens behind the scenes with the radio. Because it's one thing to like the sound of your own voice, you know what I mean? And want that to be on the air. But it was also always interesting to me up to what went into that. So working with the news and public affairs department has been really cool in that, like, it, you know, has helped me sort of learn how to edit audio. It's helped me get better at writing scripts, which has actually gotten me other jobs at this point, which has been great. You know, it has been nice to have the experience of being able to walk into the radio station and learn by doing. You know, I didn't finish school. I didn't go to school for journalism. So having a training ground where I can just go in and, you know, the people at the station are comfortable letting me potentially mess up just so that I can, you know, work at this thing I've always wanted to do has been really great. And it has been, I mean, I've enjoyed it so much that I have talked to other people I know about volunteering at the radio station, which happens to include the person I'm talking to right now, Miss Sydney. So
yes, that is correct. Yes. I feel like I share a similar story here with you, Jake, in that first of all, that you've told me about the radio station in the same location that you heard about the radio station. So not only do we share a physical connection that way, but I followed in those same footsteps. You know, you told me, you know, go on the next Wednesday. And so I did. And I just immediately started working with the news department and starting a volunteer about, last July, not this last July, but like a year and a half ago, July.
Yeah.
And I was thrown right into it. I also had never really done any sort of formal training in journalism. And I just sat down and was taught how to write a story, how to form a story, and really learned by doing in the same way that you did. And through that came opportunities to move up. And so I started working there through school, through a work study, and then eventually the news director, or the assistant news director position opened up. And so I was able to apply for that job. And so it's really just provided me with wonderful training and opportunities and portfolio building even at this point. And it's just a great place to get your feet wet, even if you have no idea what you're doing in the journalism business.
And it's so easy too. Like, it's so easy to just, you know, like literally one Wednesday a month, you show up, they teach you pretty much everything you got to know to get started. And it's so much easier than I could have ever expected it to be, especially for free.
So. Right. Absolutely. And I think you learn so much too. There's just so much that goes on, even like you said, about learning about how the radio works, but also just learning about how local government works, or learning about how things happen in the city that you live in. And it's just so important to, I think, to know these things, to fully understand where you're rooted, what things are going on, where you belong, all sorts of things. So just, I think it's vital for someone to know if they're going to be actively living in their community.
Yeah.
And so I think that takes us into the fact that WFHB is very much a volunteer-driven, but also a listener-supported radio station. WFHB is very much a volunteer-driven, but also a listener-supported radio station. And here at WFHB, it costs us about $7,000 a week to provide our community with groundbreaking local news. And so now if we could raise just $288 during this show, right now, that could provide WFHB with the funds to bring you 2 full weeks of groundbreaking local news. So visit WFHB.org right now to make your contribution. WFHB is more important today, now than ever. Help us rise up to the challenge of being a local independent news source by increasing your membership or donating for the first time. But it's even better than that, because this time we have the gift of a matched donation right now, dollar for dollar. So if you go to donate at WFHB.org and click on the red donate button, your donation will be doubled by a wonderful supporter of WFHB who has claimed to match all donations. And so we appreciate your support so very much in this time.